Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And just lastly, a word about the away fans tonight. Incredible tonight.
Oh, they were incredible. So if they are able to produce the atmosphere that they produced today in Anfield, I'm expecting that at the Emirates it's going to be even better. We're going to need them to beat a top side like Liverpool. We are going to need it right behind them. But first of all, thank you for what they've done today, for travelling here, because it made a huge difference on the team.
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, Andrew. How are you doing today?
I am okay. It's a bit cold here. I was just saying.
We've done well to get this podcast on, haven't we, Andrew? I mean, we're down to the bare bones here.
Exactly.
We're soldiering on.
I know. We could have called up the reserves, but they've all got flu and diarrhea and things like that. They couldn't make it.
Niggles and sniffles, impossible. And yet here we are, bravely continuing.
Yes, what a weekend, eh? What a weekend.
Wow, what a weekend. I mean, I enjoyed it, I've got to say. Once the decision was made, it was great fun.
I agree completely. I really do. We were speaking offline via WhatsApp, whatever it was, and we were kind of like going, you know, it might not be the worst thing to play this game. They don't have Son, and you know, we could still put out a reasonable team, etc., etc. And like, you know, I wouldn't have minded too much if the game had gone ahead. But like you say, once the decision was made, eventually, when the Premier League, you know, decided to stop whatever it was they were doing. Having parties in 10 Downing Street, probably. But, you know, the application was made on Friday, and at some point on Saturday, they kind of said, well, we've got to make a decision here, don't we? We better let people know what's going on. But once that decision was made,
I suppose we have to abide by the rules, then.
Yeah. The rules that we created and put in place, I guess we're going to have to. Yeah, once it all went down, it started to become a lot of fun, I think. And it's been a while since, you know, Arsenal Twitter is a big thing. And I don't mean in terms of its size. I just mean like there are many aspects to it. You know, think of it like a food court serving pretty much everything you could think of from all over the world.
That's true.
That's what it is. And there's going to be people who like certain things and don't like certain things. And that guy over there doesn't get along with that guy over there. But, you know, I don't think I've ever experienced Arsenal Twitter en masse being quite as united and up for the, whatever you want to call it, the defending the club or whatever it is. It brought people together in a really interesting way, I thought.
Yeah, the Arteta sexuals and people with Matteo Guendouzi as their profile picture united as one. It was a beautiful sight.
Oh, man. It is funny, though, you know, how, you know, I think sometimes we get so introspective and we focus on ourselves so much that we kind of forget, or it is kind of forgotten, I should say, that you know, we're all pretty much in the same boat. When it comes to what we want for the club. You know, we're Arsenal fans. We all want the club to do well. How we get there, how we do it, what's the best way of doing it? Nobody's ever going to agree 100% with everybody. You know, that's never going to happen. But when something like this happens, and when it feels like there is some sense of injustice, or we are, as a football club and as a fan base, being besmirched unfairly, then people rally around. I've seen, you know, some fairly high profile people out there who waded in with their hot takes on Arsenal and everything else and have been, I suppose, not taken aback by the reaction, but certainly been made very aware that, you know, if you are going to poke a hornet's nest, there's an element of stinginess to that.
Yeah, sure. You're going to get ratioed, yeah, as the kids say. I think, yes, and that sense of unity, as Mikel Arteta might term it, I think has been building, not just across the course of the season, but in recent weeks.
Brotherhood.
Brotherhood. Yeah, Twitter brotherhood. That's what he meant. He was talking about social media. I think it has been building. There have been other instances like, for example, the Man City game, which, you know, stoked the fires of injustice. And I think the Liverpool postponement.
Tomiyasu getting his head stood on. Things like that have brought people together. Yeah.
Have kind of brought people together. And this really solidified that. And I agree, it was great to see. And yeah, I also, I sort of think being hated, if that's the right word, or certainly being widely criticised, it's not the worst thing, you know. It can forge that sort of togetherness that can be a very positive thing. I think you're absolutely right. We exist in a sort of subculture of Arsenal fans, and so we become very focused and fixated on the divisions within that. But we are all on the same team, ultimately, and it is a lovely thing to be reminded of that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when some kind of ex-Spurs player who's deciding to make a big name for himself on social media, who I'm not going to name on this podcast, but I'm pretty sure everybody knows who I'm talking about, you know, wants to get involved in that kind of thing. It's like, well, hang on a second. We can say what we want about our club, but you have no business saying anything at all about us. So will we timeline this thing? I mean, is it worth doing the timeline?
Yeah, I guess so. So because we did the podcast on Friday and we were talking about it a bit then, weren't we, as a possibility?
Yeah. We weren't sure what was going to happen. And then I think in the afternoon, it was made public that we had made an application to have the game postponed because of our inability to fulfill the criteria as set out by the Premier League.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really, really important point, that I've seen a lot of stuff about how Arsenal have cheated, how Arsenal have gamed the system. And maybe there's an element of that. We did speak about that a little bit. But, you know, outside of the rules is not where we are on this. We are absolutely 100% within the rules. We made the application based on those criteria that have been applied to every game that has been postponed in recent weeks. This is the criteria that the Premier League eventually put in place, right? So the idea that Arsenal have cheated, I think, is really a big reason as to why there's been such a reaction to this. Because, like, I get people want to see a North London derby. I get people want to see football. I get that there are more people who are interested in Tottenham versus Arsenal on a Super Sunday than Burnley versus Leicester. But that game was also postponed, and there was not even the slightest bit of reaction to that postponement, even though the reason why that game was postponed and the reasons given by the Premier League were pretty much the same. There weren't enough players to play the game, and that's why the decision was made.
Yeah.
So we can talk about the Premier League in a minute, but based on the fact that the application was made on Friday afternoon, the Premier League then said, we'll have a meeting about it tomorrow, Saturday. I mean, do you think it's incumbent on them in these extraordinary times to move with greater speed than they did over this one? Because I think the delay between the application and the announcement has played a fairly big part in the reaction.
Yeah, and I'm not across the other postponement request to know how different the timescales are, but certainly within Arsenal there was a feeling that this one dragged out longer and unnecessarily long, given that they were furnished with the full facts Friday afternoon. They had a meeting at 11:15 on Saturday morning, the Premier League.
I mean, what was wrong with 9 o'clock? What's wrong with 9 o'clock?
Well, fair point. Yeah, I doubt very much happened in person. Then they obviously didn't want to announce during the Man City Chelsea game.
That's mad as well. What was that? What's that?
That to be fair is consistent. I think they have done that. They've not made an announcement during a game as yet.
Do you know?
But
what
yeah,
the,
I don't. Do I don't know. I don't know what the rationale is.
Right.
I don't know. Distraction. I don't know. Taking eyes off the product. But it was much longer than it needed to be. I think that obviously what that allowed is a kind of media storm to brew, which began on Friday night, I guess, on Sky Sports with their coverage of the Brighton game where they were talking about the issue, Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville,
yeah.
And then carried on social media, in the press, in the papers, pretty much everywhere from that point on.
What did you make of that from Gary Neville, talking about how clubs should be made play? And he said, maybe I should have spoken out about this 3 or 4 weeks ago, is what he said. And I think you pointed out that he did make a tweet towards the end of December saying pretty much what he said on Sky. It is difficult, though, sometimes to separate the opinion from the context in which that opinion is being given. You know what I mean? Because
of course.
There hasn't been, and I will accept that there's probably, with any situation like this or with any set of circumstances like this, there is a moment where there's a straw that breaks the camel's back kind of moment. Like, why are we postponing games? Why, if we don't have a clutch of COVID cases, are games being called off and not being played when clubs have academies and all that kind of stuff? So I accept that this is probably that moment for this scenario. It's exposed the rules for being subpar. So I get why, you know, there might be a moment where everyone goes, hang on, this is fucking ridiculous. But
yeah,
it is still operating within the rules. So it felt, I think, a bit like Arsenal were being, in fact it was, I think, like Arsenal were being singled out for criticism when other clubs have had games postponed and needed to have games postponed over the last number of weeks without the same level of scrutiny.
I think that the fact, well, I think as well, the fact that that happened on Sky, and Sky had a vested interest, well, yeah, obviously, in the game taking place.
Yeah, of course. So.
That's undeniable. And, you know, I think Gary Neville has other reasons for thinking these games should be played. He's an EFL owner and is aware of the problems that all these postponements are creating in the English Football League lower down the pyramid. So I think he is also speaking from that perspective. But he could have said, what he said is, I haven't spoken up about this until now, but this is wrong. But what he ought to have said, or could have said, is, to be honest, I think this is wrong, but I haven't said that previously. Therefore, I can't really hammer Arsenal for it. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's
the distinction. You can make the same point without sort of making one club the target. And I know that he said, this isn't about Arsenal, but it became very much about Arsenal. Mm. What do I think about it more generally? I think it depends what you think the rules are for. So are the rules in place to, A, stop the spread of coronavirus within football and within society more generally? Or are they in place to preserve the product and sort of make sure when games happen, we've got as many good players on the pitch as possible?
Ooh. That didn't occur to me.
Nor I, to be honest, until this weekend.
But, right.
Because for me, the rules are in position for case A, right? The rules are there to theoretically stop the spread of the virus.
But
that's my impression.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I think when they wrote these, They wrote them with the virus in mind. So if a club has an outbreak of of COVID, then there's a, you know, and it remains, I think, a very good reason for a game to be postponed. You know, we are still right in the middle of a pandemic. You know, there's no escaping that. So if a club has 6-8 COVID cases, then there's very good reason for a game to be postponed. You know, but that's not the case, and that wasn't the case with Arsenal. But to be fair, that hasn't been the case with a lot of the postponements.
That's it, yeah.
And what we're seeing is, you know, clubs are perhaps because, like a secondary impact of COVID cases within their clubs are maybe players being more stressed, more fatigued, more susceptible to injury, that kind of thing. And I think that's part of the argument that Arsenal made because, you know, over the last number of weeks, they've had the manager and a couple of coaches out and couldn't prepare games properly and also have had, you know, 6, 8, maybe 9 players who've had COVID. So
11, apparently.
11, right, okay. Well, there
Since
you go.
Since the Sunderland game. On the 21st of December.
Yeah.
So, and that presumably factors into the decision. I mean, you can make the case that that causes you to use players more frequently, therefore they get more fatigued, they become more susceptible to injury, and you end up in the position that we ended up in. I suppose what I think is Arsenal didn't break the rules. It's unclear, it's debatable whether they acted in the spirit of the rules, but that is not what's written down. Like that, they behaved within the guidelines that exist. I think that more of these games should have been played. And I'm not just talking about Arsenal. I'm talking about, obviously, many, many of these postponements, I think, could and should have been played. But people will have different views on that. You know, some people will say, you do have to preserve the product. It is about getting the best players out there, giving teams the best opportunity to field their best teams, that is somehow better for the integrity of the competition. Personally, I'm more of a mind that kind of dealing with injuries and AFCON and even this COVID stuff, which can't really be anticipated to the same degree, is just part of the vagaries of a league season. And, you know, that's what makes the champions the champion, that they deal with that and they survive it. And, you know, I think a young player getting their chance in big game because there are absentees is part of the fabric of football. You know, Marcus Rashford might not be a star if he hadn't come in for that Arsenal game and scored twice. It's just part of it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think the game should only have been postponed if there was a significant number of COVID cases. Like you say, absences through injury, through international duty, suspensions, all of those kind of things are things that football clubs need to deal with. Premier League clubs have academies. They've got enough players. And I think an interesting aspect, if we're talking about the integrity of the product, if you like, maybe the entertainment value would go up.
I think, for me, it would. There's a chaos factor to that
exactly.
I personally would find very entertaining.
I think it could be quite entertaining. I mean, look, it's a bit different when maybe you're Man City and your squad is so deep that it has no particular impact on the hugely effective but very sterile football that you play and win the league with year after year after year. But, you know, if other clubs are having to play young players, I think there is probably some consideration needed for what that might do to some of those young players if they're thrust in when they're not quite ready. You know, it might be hugely entertaining for us, for example, if, you know, in a North London derby, Tottenham have to play a 17-year-old central defender who then gets absolutely roasted on the day and never recovers. But, you know, for that young player's career, not that I particularly care about Tottenham players' careers, but you know what I mean? I think there is some consideration needed for that. But for the most part, I agree. I think the games should have been played. I think the way these rules have been written is I don't know if they anticipated this kind of a scenario, but these are the rules.
In my opinion, is that there should have been a minimum number of COVID cases among players requirement to postpone a game. I think they must know that now, but that's what it should have been. So, and there are other things they could have done. I mean, they could have looked at, you know, relaxing rules around player registration to enable more short-term loans or things like that, or to enable teams to recall players and then send them back. There are other things they could have done, but they didn't. And that's why we've ended up...
They didn't.
Out.
And look, this is where I think a lot of the frustration felt by Arsenal fans has come from, because the issue is the rules. I think Micah Richards was absolutely spot on when he said
Sir Micah Richards. His services to Arsenal, I think. Yeah.
You know, every club would do the same. And that is absolutely true. Every club 100%. Will seek every possible advantage they can get, not just over something like this, over everything. Every little thing they can do that gives them an advantage, they will do it. So I found it a bit hard to take when this was categorized as some sort of moral failing on the part of Arsenal, some kind of, like, we've let the football world down by deciding that we don't want to play, when, especially, you know, after we've played without our manager a couple of weeks ago in, you know, one of the biggest games of the season, manager and coaching staff who weren't there to prepare for the game on the training ground either, and all of these players, and Arteta's Brentford. Messaging. Yeah, well, I mean, the Brentford one is another one. That's why it's very difficult to listen to Gary Neville talk about this when, you know, at the end of that Brentford game, he's in the crowd singing and dancing with the Brentford fans when we had 4 COVID cases and weren't allowed to call the game off. You know, there are games being called off with fewer COVID cases right now. So those kind of things. So when it was presented, and it was presented by many people, and I think some of those people who are smart enough and understand football well enough to know better than to make it about one club rather than making it about the rules. Because if Arsenal had contravened the rules, you know, we don't have a leg to stand on. You absolutely don't. You can't take any kind of moral high ground if you're the one that has broken the rules. But we, as a football club, did not do anything outside of the rules. So have a discussion, have a debate, talk about it being a terrible thing, talk about how the game should go ahead, but talk about the rules and talk about how they're implemented and how you can change them to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. Whereas if you hold up one club as this kind of cartoon villain in this whole piece, you get the reaction that we got this weekend, which, you know, as we said, has been fun and unifying and everything else. But I was really surprised by some of the people who completely overlooked that aspect of it in order to, I don't know. I don't know what the thinking is because, you know, like I said, some of the guys who came out with this stuff are smarter than that and know better and really should be focusing on where the problem lies. It's not with Arsenal and it's with the rules and the way that they've been written.
Yeah, and I think Arsenal, in that respect, have fallen victim to people steadily losing faith in this system around the postponements. And I think if this was the straw that broke the camel's back, there were plenty of straws before it. You know, I think of Leicester playing a cup game and managing to field an 11 and then having their league game 2 or 3 days later postponed almost immediately. I think of Crystal Palace asking for a postponement against Spurs and then fielding a team with one change and the guy they took out was on the bench. So it was one unenforced change from their previous game. The Liverpool situation with all the false positives. You know, I think that in the wider football community, there's been a steady increase of, you know, we're not happy with this. This is a bit of a joke. And then when Arsenal won a postponement, I just think that it was completely unfair that they were the ones targeted and sort of held up accountable. I do wonder if it's partly about perception. I do wonder if I've heard some people say, oh, is this because we're a threat again, you know, and teams are starting to worry about us, clubs are starting to worry about us. I think that may be true. I also think it may be true. How are Arsenal perceived kind of externally? Is it that they are a bit of a soft touch? Is it that they are a bit feeble at times, a bit vulnerable, and then therefore them ducking out of a game, it fits with the kind of shorthand narrative around who we are.
Yeah, and that
amplifies it again. But it doesn't make it right. Arsenal have only done, as Mike Richards said, what every other club would do in the circumstances. And also where this gets really interesting is if the rules are the problem, if the Premier League is the problem, the Premier League is the clubs. They sit around on a meeting, they have a vote, they make the rules. Yeah. So no other club has a right to say, we're not happy with this, because they're party to it all. It's not like the FA are doing this, it's the Premier League, and it's self-governed. So they can only look at themselves.
That's a great point, because I've read pieces about how there's widespread anger, how Tottenham were furious, yeah, how other clubs were furious. But yeah, like you say, they're the ones who've agreed to these rules. So, I mean, I think we can say fairly categorically that the rules need to change. The question is, can they change mid-season? I don't think they can. It's like the five subs rule, isn't it? That, you know, I think we're seeing now that the five subs rule probably should have remained this season because of the impact COVID has had on football, on squads, you know, all of those things. I'm not sure quite how much you protect players by taking them off 10 minutes early or 20 minutes early, but, you know,
I mean, look at Leeds United. I don't know if you saw their game yesterday, but it was the only game on, apparently. The other one was cancelled. But first off, hats off to them. I mean, how their game... Remember when we played them and they had, like, I don't know, schoolboys in the team? I mean, it was crazy, right?
On the bench.
So I mean, they barely had a team to put together. I think they've got more injuries since then. So I honestly do, as someone who thinks these games should be played, I do take my hat off to them. And they got a great result yesterday that did us a real favour. But they had two injuries in the first half, two further injuries. And then it was like an already stretched squad had to play an hour with one change to make. And it did seem quite absurd. I mean, I think the opposition to five subs was, well, if we go that direction, we're never going back. But this season of all seasons, I think it would have been very, very useful and a good thing for player welfare.
Yeah, I agree. But you can't now change that rule mid-season because clubs are going to play fixtures and postpone fixtures where all of a sudden they have, you know, again, this idea of sporting integrity comes into things. But can you change this rule about absences in games going ahead? I mean, they must be under huge pressure to do something about it. But if the rules have been in place for half a season or more than half a season, then what happens to the next club who, let's say, is in the same position Arsenal were when they looked for the postponement, quite legitimately within the rules, but they're denied because, well, there's been a bit of a furore on Twitter and Gary Neville isn't happy about it and he says things should change, so things will change. I mean, that doesn't seem like it's feasible at all.
No, I mean, I've heard some people say maybe Arsenal will be used as like the line in the sand and they won't grant the postponement. But I don't think that was ever possible because they had granted Burnley's in the same game week. You know, you can't have one rule for one team and one rule for another within the same game week. You know, we're saying you probably can't the whole season. It's really interesting because I don't think they can go back from it now at this point. But I think we can all agree that even if Arsenal haven't... just to add, some people messaged me saying, why haven't I hammered Liverpool more over the Carabao postponement? And as much as that is a different case, it is partly because in the back of my mind, I did sort of think, well, at some point, we may need or want those rules to work in our favour. And that has come around quicker than we might have anticipated. The issue is that with these rules, with the boundaries of them becoming increasingly less clear, or maybe the holes in them becoming increasingly more apparent, how much more might this loophole be exploited going
it's
forward?
It's not a loophole, though. That's the thing. It is the rule. So I don't think it's...
It is the rule. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a loophole, but I know what you mean.
I mean, it's a rule that... How can I put it without libelling anybody? it's a rule that...
can be...
You invoke it at your discretion.
Yeah.
Right? So Arsenal didn't have to appeal for a postponement. They could have put out Charlie Patino's younger brother or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So how many more appeals for or requests for postponements do you think we're going to see between now and the end of the season? My gut instinct says, if the rules remain the same, quite a lot.
Yeah. What do you make of the contention or the criticism leveled at Arsenal over this? Because, well, they let two players go on loan. Two players went on loan and now they don't have enough players. If they kept those players, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. I mean, that added another layer to it as well. But
yeah, and I wonder if that's why Miguel Aziz came back when he did. I'd be curious to know about the timing of that. You know, was it a case that they had to recall him in order to make the case, look, we're doing everything we can to get players on the pitch? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I think we'll have to wait and see what happens with him. I'm not sure. Personally, I'm not sure that he is being recalled for first team action with us.
I agree. I just wondered if it was maybe like a numbers thing, a box they ticked. I mean, I think he was not getting enough game time at Portsmouth anyway, probably. It wasn't going brilliantly for him, so he might have come back at some point. But the timing of that was interesting. As for us loaning players out, I mean, I think I have to be honest and say we thought it was a bit weird to loan Maitland-Niles out.
Yeah.
So I can understand others raising eyebrows at that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it. But, you know, we have done a lot in the last number of weeks with COVID. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't think this wasn't a case of like, right, let's get Maitland-Niles out on loan and Balogun out on loan because we want to get the North London derby called off. I mean, Arsenal's desire, if at all possible, would have been to play that game, you know? So I don't, you know, I don't think there's anything nefarious in that sense. Balogun needed a loan. We couldn't just hang on to him for one fixture just so we could have numbers. I mean, that's a decision that's been made about a really talented young player and his future and his development. That's why he's gone to Middlesbrough for the rest of the season. Maitland-Niles wasn't really playing anyway and had a chance to go to Roma, and the deal was done again before, you know, the Xhaka red card and all of that kind of stuff. So, like, yeah, I get it. I think it's coincidence. It's certainly not a plan.
No, I think the Balogun one is sort of irrelevant because although he might have contributed to the numbers, I just think he's with the players who are fit. I mean, we know Lacazette was probably fit, and Nketiah probably fit, Martinelli probably fit. So Balogun's like fourth choice in his position. I just don't really regard that as particularly relevant. It's interesting, you mentioned Xhaka there. And I do wonder, speaking of straws breaking camels' backs, I do wonder if that was the thing that really, I don't know. I have to wonder whether the game would have been postponed if he was available. I know that the numbers suggest that we would have struggled anyway, but I do wonder if, like, in those internal meetings when they were looking at it and talking about it, his absence, I think, must have weighed significantly. I know that will. Fortunately, no one who listens to other clubs listens to this, so no one will hear me say that on air. But do you agree? Like, I feel like that if he was fit and if he was available, maybe there would have been a game on?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those situations, I think, where I think we'd be wrong to say that maybe it isn't in some way beneficial for us because of the absences that we have.
Mm.
But look, it comes down to just operating within the guidelines that exist at this moment in time, which is what we've done.
Yeah, and I want people who run the club to look out for the best interest of the club. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that, to be honest, I feel like the postponements went against us quite a few times. You know, certainly the Liverpool one felt like it went against us. We're all looking forward to playing there under 12s or whatever it might be.
I think
even arguably the Wolves won. You know, we had very good momentum at that time. I think that's a game we probably would have won, ramped up the pressure on the people around us. There may be other obviously Brentford being another case. And Arteta was publicly saying, look, we want to play. And there is a slight element of this which feels a bit like if you can't beat them, join them. And actually, I'm all for that. Like, if everyone else is playing the game, why shouldn't you?
Well, exactly. We would be naive not to, you know? Like, as if any other club in those circumstances wouldn't have tried. Like, Tottenham wouldn't have tried. Give me a break, you know? The other thing to say maybe about the Liverpool game being postponed is that the EFL rules are quite different. You know, it's basically, well, you've got players, stick them out there. It doesn't matter how far down your academy you need to go. Get the under nines on the bench if that's what it takes, you know. And that's why maybe the Liverpool game being postponed felt a bit different. But
and I think it is a good thing for Arsenal. I mean, personally, I think we would have had a chance of going to Spurs and getting a pretty good result. They were missing a number of key players, Son, Reguilón, Romero, Dier. And a similar-ish team from us did pretty well at Anfield a few nights before. However, when you look at the sort of lay of the land in terms of our fixtures and you think about the fact that the amount of rest we'll get before the second leg of Liverpool and then subsequently the Burnley game, the fact that our February looks pretty sparse compared to a lot of other clubs, the fact that Spurs are going to have to fit in, is it four games now? You know, that they've missed in the Premier League, and they look like maybe our most threatening rival in terms of league places. I think this definitely does suit Arsenal, and I think it's a good thing that we had this little break, even though, you know, that doesn't come with any guarantees. We don't know what team we'll be able to put out on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, Mikel Arteta is pretty guarded as it when it comes to team news at the best of times.
Well,
so
with good reason.
I mean, I think that was probably a factor of late, you know, because this is not necessarily a recent development, but I just wonder, you know, they used to put out the fitness update from the medical team and they've stopped doing that. And I just wonder if, as a kind of precautionary measure, they don't want to make too much fitness information public in case a situation like this arose and they needed to, you know, use the rules.
Yeah. Assess everything internally.
Yeah.
I think the coaching staff generally are, I don't think they ever loved the sort of detailed medical updates. I'm curious to see if they come back, because I think there was always a sort of sense of, well, why are we giving this information to opponents? It's a really interesting one, that, I think, because obviously fans want to know. And so you need to have some communication with fans about that. But I also understand wanting to withhold things as much as possible. Tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But look, we are where we are right now. We've got a game on Thursday, of course, against Liverpool, then a game against Burnley. So it does give us that bit of a chance to get some players hopefully back and rested, and maybe some players who were borderline perhaps for this weekend, if the game had gone ahead, might be over the other side of the border right now.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, you'd like to think people like Smith Rowe, Tomiyasu, some of the knocks we picked up in Liverpool, I think Chambers, Saka, who else was mentioned? Cedric was mentioned. There's one. Tierney was one that was mentioned to me. You'd like to think they'd have a chance. Obviously, Granit Xhaka, he'll be banned for both these games coming up next week.
Yeah.
But home games, maybe a little bit more tolerable in that respect. And hopefully some other midfielders back. Martin Odegaard's period of isolation certainly will be over by then.
Yeah.
It's just a question of what sort of condition he's in.
Should we just finish this part of the podcast by just talking again about how much fun it was? Because it really was.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, also, like, it is just great to see people losing their shit, basically, boiling their piss over this stuff. I mean, it's very, 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 very funny. And I, to be honest, I can't wait for that game whenever it comes round, because it's going to be very heated. And yeah, it's just great to sort of play up the rivalry and.
Yeah, I mean, the sense of like faux injustice that I saw from some of the Tottenham fans. Like, obviously, I don't follow too many Tottenham fans, but there were things being retweeted into my timeline from from Arsenal fans, like petitions. You know, we should ask the Queen to do fucking something about this, as if she hasn't got enough going on at the moment.
Well, you know, let's talk about it from this perspective. Why are they so scared to play our first team? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I love that aspect of it. Like, they're so desperate to get to have a go at us when we're weak. Because they remember the first game. 3-1, they got absolutely trounced. And we're a better team now than we were then.
Yeah.
So, no wonder they're scared.
Yeah. And look, like I said, I would have quite liked to play this weekend because, you know, they had some players missing. But just the way that somehow this was seen as a piece of underhanded chicanery by Arsenal and that it really annoyed so many other people is absolutely great. And that sense of unity between Arsenal fans online, which I think has been present in real life too. And you can say that better than I can because you've been at games and you've been to away games and everything else. And I, you know, I haven't, for obvious reasons, due to travel, not been there this season, unfortunately. But, you know, even from a distance, you can feel that there is a connection between the fans and the team that was maybe not quite there in the last couple of years for various reasons. New personalities, new characters, new... a new connection, if you like. But all of that is there, and for it to play out online and in real life is really great. And I hope it's something that we can continue to cultivate. Like, I hope it's impossible to know, but I really hope that within the club that the reaction to this is something that they can use. Because, you know, I think they're not going to sit there and feel like they've been picked on or anything like that. But at the same time, I'm curious to see what Mikel Arteta has to say in his press conference this week before the Liverpool game, because he's going to be asked about it. And I've seen a few snippy comments from other managers and other people. I'm curious to see his reaction, how he deals with it internally, how that then is transmitted into the way that we play and approach these games. And I think we had a question here. Maybe I'll just see if I can find it because it might be relevant. 1-0 to the Arsenal, who's at 1-0 Arsenal, said, interesting to assess the effect of this week. The Emirates will be rocking on Thursday. The fans seem more united than ever. Without a goal being scored, Arteta has found a unifying moment. How well do you think Arteta has handled the game away from the game? And I think some of it is circumstance, but it's also true that, you know, on Thursday, if there is this sense that, like, everyone is against us and Liverpool, you know, have had the postponement thing, et cetera, that it will create an atmosphere which could be conducive to, like, a really great cup tie.
Yeah, I mean, I think we said on Friday about the atmosphere is going to be great. And this is prior to all this. Mm. So I think, yeah, this is just going to really turn up the volume and it should be a great occasion. I really hope we can get the result.
Yeah.
And more broadly, I mean, we spoke about Tottenham being annoyed, Daniel Levy being annoyed, the Spurs fans being annoyed. Those reasons in itself were just good justifications for doing this. Like, if that's all this was about, it was worth it.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not, but let's just imagine for a moment that it was just to really annoy Spurs.
Absolutely. That's enough for me.
I'm just sitting here smiling at that. That's fine. All right. Will we take a break?
Let's take a break.
We'll do your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. James, in the spirit of annoying Tottenham, you can go first. Not that this would annoy Tottenham. I'm enjoying the idea.
That would annoy Tottenham, actually. I really hope this is accurate. So this is from Twitter, JRST91. And they ask, are you aware that on the latest FIFA update, if you're beating Spurs, the crowd starts singing, Tottenham get battered everywhere they go?
No way.
Can anyone corroborate this?
No way. That would be fucking amazing. I'll tell you this, though. I've never played Tottenham on FIFA. Like, if I'm playing FIFA 22 and I go onto the seasons thing where you just play online against randoms, 96% of the time the opposition is PSG. Every single fucking player out there is using PSG, I guess because of Messi and Neymar and Mbappe. Like, I get it, I understand it, but it's sort of boring when you're
why would they not want to use Sun and Bergwijn instead?
Why indeed? Who knows? So I don't, I obviously can't say if that's the case, but I
we need
to
find out
true.
If that's true, that'd be amazing on the part of EA. I mean, wow, I couldn't endorse a game harder if that is correct. So let us know, FIFA aficionados.
I was going to say we could probably do a FIFA thing again, but it would mean one of us would have to play with Tottenham, and that's not something...
Under no circumstances.
No way. Absolutely not prepared to do that at all. So
so that was my sort of silly little question. I hope that's true. Hey, do you want a serious one?
Go on.
So this is from... C. White 90.
Okay.
Goodly morning, he says. I think it probably is a goodly morning. Fair shout. Not specific to Arsenal, but do you think the wider media approach to COVID cases and postponements underplays the impact of the virus on players' well-being? I am 32 and a fairly serious runner. Despite fortunately having quite a mild case of COVID-19, I'm still out of breath and easily fatigued on short runs a few weeks later. Has all the debate forgotten that this can still be a serious virus with lasting effects on player health and performance we may not see?
I think that's a very fair point. I think it's a very fair point. That, like, for most people, thankfully, who get it, it is mild.
But at this point, with vaccines and with different variants,
it seems to be. For most people.
But not for all.
Well, of course. And the thing is, when the volume of cases is as high as it is, and infections is as high as it is with this variant, that's going to increase the amount of people who, unfortunately, don't have a mild case. And look, I know from personal experience what damage this virus can do. But I also think it's something that, you know, in terms of the most extreme impact it can have, right? However, I've been reading quite a bit of late about the idea of long COVID, and we're heading up on 2 years, which isn't really a long time, you know, with a new illness, to understand what the long-term impact or complications of it might be for certain people. I think it might be possible that players who contract COVID find it difficult. I'm sure I remember reading maybe in the first lockdown or when football came back, was it Newcastle? Steve Bruce was talking about how certain players have had it.
Steve Bruce, yeah.
And how, like, they're just knackered. They're jaded, they're banjaxed, they're all kinds of things, that they don't have the physical capacity that they've that they previously had, or it took them some time to get back to that level. So, yeah, I mean, it is a consideration, I guess.
Yeah, and we've, you know, we've got very recent sort of experience of that ourselves. I mean, Alphonso Davies, the Bayern Munich defender, was diagnosed with heart muscle inflammation, which has prevented him training for a period of time. Mm. And of course, over the weekend, we had the story about Pierre Aubameyang as well.
Yeah. I mean, we did a question on that, actually, from the real Chicken Dipper on the Discord, who said, Goodly still in fifth place, lols, morning. What do you guys make of Aubameyang's heart issues, and how worried are you, current issues aside, we might never see him play again? Without speculating, I wonder if he's suffering from some sort of long COVID. We don't hear much about the lasting effects of players having caught the virus, and do you think it would explain his huge dip in form?
Really hard to speculate, yeah, isn't it, about someone's health? And obviously, I'm not a doctor. In this instance, Arsenal are very keen to make clear that they're not overly concerned about Aubameyang at this point. I think the fact that the Gabon statement diagnosed three players with the same thing suggests that it's unlikely to be something dramatically serious, just on a purely statistical basis. I think it's myocarditis, which is like heart inflammation, is quite a common side effect of COVID in healthy young people. And in fact, Thomas Tuchel was speaking a couple of weeks ago about, maybe it was N'Golo Kante or somebody else, he was talking about players returning from COVID, and he was making the point that they have to undergo routine heart checks in order to return to training. And I suspect that's exactly what's happened in the Gabon camp, and that these players have been basically deemed not yet ready to play. Apparently, he had been training, Aubameyang, so clearly fine to train, but perhaps not to play. Nevertheless, of course, it's alarming. Of course, it's concerning. And, you know, I know the club are in dialogue with Gabon, and I'm sure Oba's getting well looked after.
Yeah, I mean, fingers crossed for him and for his teammates, and that everything is A-okay, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he could theoretically play in their final group game, which, you know, they need, and would be a big shame for him if he missed the whole of AFCON. If they were to go out and him not play, that would really compound what's been a really difficult period for him. Just on the illness front, I think we should factor it into our assessment of him that he has had COVID more than once. He also had malaria, let's not forget, in that period, another disease that can have quite long-lasting implications. So even if he's not still carrying the effects of those illnesses, the stop-start nature of his involvement over the past, 12 to 18 months, I think clearly has been a factor in his struggles.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens, and whether something in the transfer market means that we need to bring him back into the fold, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. We talked about that a bit on Friday as well. But, you know, first and foremost, let's hope he gets well and stays well, and then we'll see where we are. But, yeah, look, I do think this is going to be a conversation that, as this pandemic continues and it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon, that there will be players like everyone else who are more adversely impacted than others.
Yeah, just because a guy's 10 days are up and just because he's now testing negative does not mean he's not in some capacity feeling the effects of the virus.
That'd be a good question, I think, for Mikel Arteta. Without having to go into specifics, but is or have there been COVID cases within Arsenal that have left players slow to return to their peak physical capability? I wonder.
Yeah, I would be fascinated to find out. Okay, shall we have another question?
Yeah.
This is one from Indistinct Chattering at David Lindor. It says, oddly morning, men, which I quite like.
Oddly.
Do you think the confidence level of fringe squad members took a hit with the request to postpone? I.e. that the club would rather do that than use them in a North London derby? And if so, does that matter?
I don't know. I mean, it might not have been about the first 11 we could put out as much as what we would have after that on the bench, you know? I think
13 outfield players is the requirement.
Right. So if we couldn't fulfill 13 outfield players, it would have meant, you know, a bench full of kids, basically.
And the Premier League appear to be briefing, because I've read it several places today, that even with the AFCON players, we would have struggled in terms of the numbers. So, I think players won't be bothered by that. Honestly, knowing what footballers are like, they'll think, oh, great, we'll probably get the day off on Sunday now. Genuinely, like, I think... And they'll be delighted to have that rest and respite and time with their families and all those things and focus on Thursday. Mm. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be sitting at home, you know, crying about the fact that they weren't playing in this particular game.
Just quickly, I didn't see a question about it specifically, but news from Italy this morning that Pablo Mari, speaking of squad players, gets quite close to a move to Udinese.
I have a question about it, actually, if you want.
Oh, go on. Yeah.
Benjamin Brooks, who's at bearded_chap. He says, hi, gents. With Pablo Mari looking likely to depart, does this mean Arteta's becoming more pragmatic rather than dogmatic? He previously spoke of specificity for positions, but losing our left-footed centre-back cover doesn't seem to marry with this. So... It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. You know, it was such a feature, wasn't it, of his teams and his squad that he would always have a left-sided centre-half out there and he wanted two in the squad in case he lost one. Mm. I think he probably just felt he had to let Marie go. I mean, he's not used him at all, has he, since the very start of the season?
No, he hasn't been seen since the Chelsea game. You know, when Lukaku... I don't think Lukaku had to do a lot to physically monster him on the day, and he hasn't been seen. And it's because Gabriel is back, obviously, and playing well. That's a big part of it.
A lot more consistently.
Playing a lot more, but you know, I think what we are probably saying is, oh fuck, something fell off my desk. I think they're saying that if Gabriel is out, we would prefer to use Rob Holding as the left-sided centre-half than Pablo Mari, in which case we might as well let him go. Like, I understand the concern when it comes to squad depth, particularly at a time where, you know, we are short of numbers, but I don't think it's a real loss in terms of quality, to be honest. You know?
No, and you have got other options. I mean, you know, say Tomiyasu, for example, plays left-sided centre-half for Japan.
Yeah.
In a pinch, if you happen to lose Gabriel and Rob Holding, or Gabriel and Ben White, you've got that option. Callum Chambers is still in the squad. I know people have their reservations about him, but I'm not sure he's any worse than Pablo Mari based on what we've seen this season.
No.
And even then, if things get absolutely dire, Kieran Tierney can play at centre-half. So, you know, I think it's okay. This is not, unlike the Maitland-Niles one, this is not one, famous last words, that I'm worried about.
No, me neither. I don't think he's, you know, ever quite been at the level we needed. So,
no.
Yeah. It does feel a bit strange, players going on loan when you could make a very good case for adding to the squad before you let anyone else go.
Unless those things are somehow related. I don't know, but unless there's
some
a need to free some wage bill. I don't know.
Homegrown Yeah, what are the quotas in terms of...
Yeah, true. I don't know where
so
we
maybe
are
that's,
at with that.
Well, we've lost a homegrown player in Maitland-Niles.
Yeah, very much so.
But maybe we were trying to make some space. Maybe, you know, the moving of Marie is as much about making space for a non-homegrown player.
Could be.
Here's a question from the Discord from Huzz, who says, "Hello, gents. With Marseille having a transfer ban, does Guendouzi have any future at Arsenal? With the right attitude, he could do a great partnership with Partey."
Yeah, don't know. I'm trying to find out because there's slightly conflicting information around about what exactly the nature of the deal with Marseille is.
I was told at the time that it was an obligation at the end of the loan.
Likewise.
Yeah.
I think there might have been certain conditions around the obligation, but nothing hugely problematic. Stuff like don't get relegated, things like that. Whether a transfer ban impacts all that on that, I don't know. I think Kovacic to Chelsea happened in a similar fashion during a transfer ban for them, where he was already there on loan, already registered with them, and it was made permanent.
Yeah.
But I'd need to double check that. My suspicion would be if the deal is done, the deal is done, and it will happen.
Yeah.
I find it hard to foresee him having a future at Arsenal at this point.
I agree with that. I agree.
I'd be very surprised.
Yeah,
very,
me too.
Very, very surprised.
Me too. Look, if there's an obligation to buy at the end of the deal, and things seem to be going pretty well for him at Marseille, like they like him, he likes them, which is, you know, not necessarily the case, the other way around, why wouldn't it go ahead? Now, unless their transfer ban precludes it, but like you say, there's precedent for it to go through, so we'll wait.
We shall see.
We shall see.
I thought this was interesting on the Discord from MK, sort of about refereeing. So, hey guys, would love your take on this. In the game against Liverpool last Thursday, I would argue that we would have been better off if Granit had made the foul in the box rather than outside, so he would only receive a yellow card. Maybe Liverpool would have scored the penalty, but our winning chances would still be there. Why not change the rule so the referee can give a penalty and a yellow card if a foul outside the box takes away an obvious scoring chance? This would make the punishment fit the crime and the game won't be ruined like it was last week.
I think that's that is a suggestion that I've heard before and I quite like, because it goes back to what we were talking about the how quick referees can be to send players off. And what it does is, A, in some cases it ruins the game. I think we talked about this after the Man City game, you know, that what was a brilliant game of football turned out to be an inevitable, you know, Man City win, because when you're playing against them with 10 men, regardless of how late the goal was. It is interesting, isn't it, that this rule, this triple jeopardy rule, where a player, if he's making a genuine attempt to go for the ball and concedes a penalty, even if he's the last man, he's given a yellow card, you don't have that triple punishment of red card, suspension, and penalty being given. I don't quite know why it doesn't apply outside the box.
No, because I think like Xhaka would have been the question is somewhere right. In some ways, he would have been better off committing that foul a few yards closer to goal.
Yeah, because, you know, he did, as clumsy as it was, as much as he tried to karate kick the ball into space. Oh, and a big shout out to whoever let me see if I can find that. Did you see that clip?
Oh yeah, it was Doom and Guna made a great video clip of
the Xhaka.
Well, it was us reading out Johnny Liu's piece about Xhaka played over it.
Yeah.
I'll give it a retweet.
Yeah,
so it's very funny.
Yeah. It's good. But I've lost my train of thought here. But I do think he was actually trying to get the ball. I think it was a very clumsy, not particularly smart way of trying to get the ball, but I think he was trying to get the ball. And in those circumstances, I'm not sure why. What was the distance between inside the box and outside the box in that? 10 inches, 18 inches, 2 feet, whatever it was. Mm. You know, what's the difference there that makes one... you can judge it under this triple jeopardy rule or whatever you want to call it, and the other is just an instant red card. Like, the referee had no hesitation about taking the card out. Like, I thought it was a red card, but I think that is a better solution.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I think, or maybe look at taking away, or is there a way that you could keep the player on the pitch but suspend them for the next game? Like, there's got to be some way of redressing that balance. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So that, because going it down to 10 men, it does so change the dynamic of one game. I quite like the reader's suggestion, you know, mm. if it's a clear goal scoring opportunity outside the box, award a penalty and a yellow card. I mean, a penalty is a much higher sort of expected goals than almost any other chance.
So yeah.
It's like 0.7 or something, but you know.
What is the difference between a penalty and a guy going one-on-one with the goalkeeper with just the keeper to beat? I don't know.
Well, probability says penalties are scored a lot more frequently, basically. But yeah, it does seem mad. That is kind of a gap in the law, I think, that Xhaka was punished so much more harshly than if he committed the foul when Jota was arguably in a better scoring position. Yeah.
Okay, here's one from Prakash Narayan, who's at NagapundiPrex on Twitter, who says, I feel what recent reports indicating that William Saliba is expected back at the end of the season, White, Gabriel and Saliba could be our very own Stones, Laporte and Diaz, young mobile defenders who replace each other without a hitch. Your take?
It's a nice idea.
Mm.
I'm really in two minds on Saliba. I mean, a few months ago, I kind of thought, I can't see him coming back. You know, I thought there was too much water under the bridge. He'd be so enamoured with playing regularly for Marseille. I mean, their transfer ban helps in that respect. Mm. The thing is, if we have European football next season, whether it's Champions League or Europa League, we're going to need more centre-halves. And it looks like Pablo Marie is probably not going to be one of them if he's going to be permitted to leave on loan at this stage.
Mm.
We need some really top quality ones, and Saliba would be a great addition, because I could see him partnering Gabriel. I could see him partnering White. You know, I think a lot of times the instinct is, well, how would we play them together? You know, would we have to play a back three? Could White play at right back? I think the reality is, even if you're playing 4-4-2, if you're competing on multiple fronts, you're going to need to rotate. And sometimes a pair will emerge as the superior pair and you'll stick with them. And other times that dynamic might change. Like John Stones, he's been in and out at City because partnerships have good runs and then it changes.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, it would be a great solution for Arsenal if we could get him back. Bear in mind that, you know, most of the transfer fees probably paid at this point. He is our player. He's under contract for another 2 years. He's a really promising prospect. I would consider that a very happy ending to quite a sort of torturous story until this point.
Well, you know what? I think the way that we look at this situation now is a bit different than, let's say, last summer, when the decision was made very quickly that they were going to loan him out. And everyone was like, what the fuck? Arteta hates young players. He hates Saliba. He hates everything, you know, to do with Raul or whatever it might be. You know, all these things that went on. Now, you look at what he's doing in Marseille, which is playing regularly, playing very well, developing nicely as a central defender. He is still only 20? Is he 21 yet? He's 21 in March.
21 in March.
Right? So it's still so young. So young for a central defender, right? We're now seeing a team developing at Arsenal full of 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds, and a couple of more experienced players in the mix. For the most part, the age profile at Arsenal has changed. The manager's working with these young players. He's getting a lot out of them. And now it becomes much easier to see, A, the logic in loaning Saliba out, you know, so he can get this playing time, and B, a pathway into this Arsenal team. So my feeling on it maybe 6 months ago was like, I'm really not sure it's going to work out. Now I feel like it's a really promising situation for Arsenal, one that I'm slightly anticipating, excitedly, the idea of Saliba being back in the team next season and back in the squad next season, because all the aspects, all the physical aspects of his game, you know, his height, his profile, his pace, what he does with the ball, they fit. They fit this Arsenal team now. Quite what the situation is, whether he feels, maybe he felt at the time he's been poorly treated, but maybe when he looks at how he's developed and what the loan deals have done for him, he might feel like, okay, they were probably right, you know, to send me out on loan. So I think the decision to send him on loan, I always said I thought it was the right one because he's still so young as a central defender. And the benefit of that should be that he comes back into an Arsenal team and a squad that he absolutely fits in perfectly. Age profile, physical profile, the way he plays the game, all of it works. So,
oh, yeah, we're getting back a better player, yeah. I'm sure. And that's kind of the point of the loan, I guess. The other thing to say is last summer when we were talking about it in the early part of the summer, before the Ben White deal, you know, we were looking at thinking, oh, is he going to come in and play alongside Gabriel? Could that be our centre-half? In a way, the signing of White and the success of White and Gabriel takes a bit of the pressure off Saliba that would have been there, which I'm sure Arteta would like, you know, in terms of having not having to rush his introduction. The only question, the only nagging question is sort of how would he feel about that?
Well, that's
you
it. Know? Yeah. That's the thing
we can't control.
Yeah.
No one at Arsenal can really control that. And if he decides, well, I don't want to do that, I want to go and play every single week, every single game, he may leave. But at least he'll leave, I think, with a value significantly higher than it was 12 months ago. Based on what he's done at Marseille. Questions? I had more.
I've got one here.
Go on. You do one.
We have one. I say I've got one and then I don't have it in front of me. Wellowino, who's at Wellowino on Twitter, says, given that we only play one league game now against Burnley before the return of the AFCON players, do you think we should still try to sign a midfielder? And if we do, should it only be a short or a long-term permanent signing instead of a short-term loan like Arthur? And then on the Discord, we had Lefty Righty asking, Arthur, Yuri Tielemans, or Bruno Guimaraes at central midfield, or anyone else we've been linked with, who is your pick and why?
Well, I mean, it's great. I mean, Ghana could go out. Is it today? They play, or it might be tomorrow, but they've got a game where I think they need to win 2-0, something like that,
right,
going through against someone not especially good. Like
I'm looking Ghana at the fixtures.
It is Comoros tomorrow, 7 o'clock. I think they need a 2-0 win. They certainly need a result, because I think, they trail. They trail...
they're
Gabon,
third. Yeah, they're third in their... They're third in their group. So if Gabon...
So some of the third teams go through, basically.
Oh, right, okay.
I mean, the likelihood is they get there, but it'd be nice... Thoughts. I think we might get Tom's party back again. Sorry to our Ghanaian listeners. Do I think we still need a midfielder? Yeah, I think we probably... I think we should certainly try and do it. I think, you know, are we going to loan someone better than Elneny? Very possibly. And so that would improve the squad. Maitland-Niles has gone, ultimately. And I think it would be good to replace him if we can. It's great that we've only got one league game until we get, may well get Thomas Partey back. That's really good news. But I still think it's worth doing something with. In terms of kind of long-term, short-term thing, it really depends what's feasible.
Mm.
I mean, if you read me that list of three players, what was it? Arthur, Tielemans and Guimarães, Bruno at Lyon. I mean, I'd choose Tielemans, of course, I think. For me, that's obvious. He's a Premier League player. He's one who's,
yeah, I like
him. Been really impressive. Loads of ability. Yeah, I think he'd be a great signing. Sort of like, you know, we've seen with White the advantage of buying Premier League players, you know, at Ramsdale to an extent, that we've also seen with them they can be very expensive.
Mm.
I'm sure that would be the case again. But yeah, I do like him. I mean, I thought Arsenal should have been in for him when he left Monaco, and he's done well at Leicester. But I don't see that as a kind of mid-season deal, really.
No, I mean, it's not dissimilar to the Vlahovic one in that there are 18 months left on his contract. It does seem like there's some uncertainty. Like, we know that Vlahovic is not going to sign a new contract with Fiorentina. I read that piece, by the way, in the Financial Times.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The owner, yeah, it's very good.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is interesting. I'll put a link to it in the show notes if people want to have a read. But I guess that then, you know, if you're a club and you want to maximize the transfer value of a player, even if you don't want to lose him mid-season, he's probably going to fetch more in January than he is in the summer.
True.
So it depends on how Arsenal want to push the boat out, if they want to push the boat out at all. If a player is potentially available, yeah, it all comes down to what they're planning on doing. I do think we still need a midfield signing. Mm. Yeah,
like, even if we could get away without one, it's like, that's not really the point. You know, we're not trying to get away with it. We're trying to take every opportunity to improve the squad.
Yes, maximize every window, as Arteta said.
Absolutely. And even if that is a short-term loan signing, then so be it. I mean, the noises coming out of Italy regarding Arthur are quite conflicting. Publicly, Allegri's kind of saying, I want to keep my squad together to the end of the season. Some of the press reports suggest they will ultimately decide to let him go. We'll have to wait and see on that. I think, you know, I get the sense that if Arsenal can sign him on loan and reserve resource for the attempt at Vlahovic, then that makes a degree of sense. And that's what they'll try and do. But my optimism about Vlahovic is, there's not a great deal of it.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it on Friday, didn't we?
I think it's more likely to not happen than happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, on that, David Barrett, who's at Donegal Dave 1976, says, I can't help but feel that the club has this season and next to achieve Champions League football. Anything longer, and we know the Vultures will come after valuable youngsters, especially Saka. Should we break the bank in January for a top four finish this season? I think that is a consideration. It has to be something that they're thinking about. If you're looking at everything at Arsenal with a long-term view, if you're building something, making sure you can keep your best young players is a big part of it. How do you do that? By being successful, by showing progress, and, you know, speculate to accumulate or gamble on a signing in January, whatever you want to call it, it could certainly help.
Certainly, yeah. And let's not forget, within a year or two, Chris Wood is going to be firing Newcastle into the top four as well. there is that to consider. I think we all agree on that. And I think clearly Arteta seems to agree based on what he's saying publicly. And I think there is a will above and beyond him to make that happen. I mean, it is worth saying we are only really at the halfway stage of the window. I think it's felt like we were near the end because there was such desperation for us to get bodies in, particularly with the derby and all the congestion that we faced. But really, it's the second half of a window where business picks up.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair to say there's a way to go yet, and that efforts may intensify towards the end of the window. I don't think it's a given that we get business done, but I would like to think, based on sort of the aggression with which we approached the market last summer, that we'll certainly make every effort to strengthen the squad.
Let me ask you this one then. It comes from the Discord, KYKid8, slippery customer, no doubt. He said, are we at a place now where we trust Edu and Arteta to make the right next move?
I think so. I mean, I think you can see that even in the links to players that have been out there. I mean, Arthur's been quite divisive. I think I've seen plenty of people saying, oh, don't fancy him. But even then, you know, in the next breath, they'll say, but I didn't fancy Ramsdale. Mm. Or I wasn't sure about Ben White or Tomiyasu. I think that the trust is much stronger now than it has been. And I think, yeah, I think justifiably so. Is that your impression?
Yeah, I mean, was it another piece by Jonathan Liu at the weekend where he was talking about...
I haven't read that one, actually, yeah.
He was talking about, yeah, a good piece on our transfer business and taking a long-term view on things, which, you know, we've discussed lots of times. And, you know, when you say it, it makes a lot of sense, but living through it and experiencing it is quite different because, you know, you still got to win football matches. But he was talking about... Emerson Royale.
Yeah.
With cheese. And basically, Arteta wasn't sure about him. This was a deal, though, that maybe Edu was more in favor of, and Arteta was like, no, and we ended up with Tomiyasu, and I think we've come out on top there. I think as well there was a difference when we were thinking about goalkeeper, because... I remember seeing and hearing that we were looking at Neto, of course, was another Kia client and everything else. And I think what we would have been doing there is signing an average, probably quite expensive second choice goalkeeper to Bernd Leno. Mm. And instead, what we got was Arteta's pick in Aaron Ramsdale, who... so far, you know, has added, if not a new dimension, but certainly new characteristics to the team. So I'd probably trust Arteta's judgment a little more than I would trust Edu's at this point. But in conjunction, you know, together, the work that they've done in the last transfer window, and when you go back, leaving aside the Runarsson one, which was, you know... maybe there were circumstances, but still a really terrible transfer. Gabriel and Thomas Partey in the previous window, leaving aside Willian as well. But you know what I mean? There've been some fairly good hits, you would have to say.
Yeah, I think someone made the point on Discord. I think since Arteta was appointed manager rather than head coach, which I think rather astutely was the land on Discord, manages to avoid Willian, because I think that came just before. Mm. Gabriel, Runarsson, which is obviously the questionable one, Partey, Benjamin White, Nuno Tavares, Sambi Lokonga, Aaron Ramsdale, Martin Odegaard, Tomiyasu. You won't find too many people taking issue with many of those deals. The point about Edu and Neto and who was the other one we're talking about? Emerson.
Yeah.
I reported on both those things to different extents. And I think I have seen it sort of lazily characterised as like Edu wanted the bad players and Mikel wanted the good players. I think it's a bit more nuanced than that, in that if your manager is saying to you, I really want this goalkeeper, but you have doubts, and you're not crazy to have doubts. You know, you weren't the only one in the room or in the world saying that sounds a bit of a steep price for that player. Mm. You know, part of Edu's job is to look at the kind of budgetary issues and say, yeah, I get that, but we could do this. And in the same with Tomiyasu, it was like Emerson was being discussed as a potential swap with Bellerin. And, I think it's worth saying that there was a kind of financial consideration to those suggestions as well as a purely technical one. And the important thing is you get to the right result at the end. and they did.
Mm.
So
yeah, yeah.
In any process, people are going to have different views on players. I think the important thing is that, like, the consensus you arrive at is the right one. And fortunately, it feels like Arsenal managed to do that this summer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, look, I hope whatever they do this month, and I do hope they do something, because not like we're sort of on the crest of a wave or something like that, but I do feel like there's a bit of momentum to us. Feel like
Definitely.
There's a bit of momentum. And
you've got to capitalise on it
when
it's there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, just a bit of a turbo boost, a bit of something to give everybody, you know, a kick from fans to players. You know, if the squad are looking at what's coming up between now and May and you add another good player to that squad, I don't think it does anything negative. It enhances the level of the squad that you have, the level of the team, the competition in and around, you know, all of that will be or could be very useful. So I hope they do something.
And win a game on Thursday.
Mm, you're in a cup final.
You can justifiably say to any new January signing, you can play in a cup final in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's no small thing. So, yeah, I completely agree. There is a momentum and we should be pushing on at this time. It's the right time. There's a good feeling around the club. And I think we're an attractive, a much more attractive proposition than we were 6 months ago. So, yeah, fingers crossed for the window.
All right. I think we better leave it there for today because we've, you know, done plenty and there hasn't even been a game of football. So there is a game of football coming up on Thursday, of course, the semi-final second leg against Liverpool. We will be previewing that over on Patreon. You can join us over there, patreon.com/arseblog. We'll be here on Friday with a post-Liverpool Arsecast extra. And hopefully we are talking about a cup final in a couple of weeks' time. For now, though, thank you very much as always for being here, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.